Westport for Cantucuttery. The Maine outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, Jim Thorne.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. I'm back from a long hiatus. Haven't been on the Maine Outdoors for quite a while, and one of the reasons why we'll get into later in the program. But welcome. We are the longest-running, as we say, show on radio dedicated to the Maine Outdoors, everything Maine Outdoors, hunting, fishing, hiking, being in the outdoors. If it's in the outdoors, that's what we are all about. And let's go around the camp tonight over by the fire. He's only got two logs on. It must not be very cold tonight. And back behind the bulletproof glass is Scotty Bates. Hi, Scotty.
Yes. Hello, Jim.
How are you tonight?
Good. And it's been warm at camp. I've been to camp all week and just got back this afternoon. It's been a great week to be up there.
All right. Did you see any birds while you were up
there? We saw a lot of birds. Nobody really was interested in shooting that many. We just wanted to get out and see them.
Yeah.
And we saw a lynx like less than a half mile from camp, and that's rare.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, through the I know I go on Facebook all the time, and I see some of the pictures that some people will take on Maine deer hunting and Maine moose hunting and so forth, and these lynx, a lot of times you'll talk to people, and they'll say, it was right there, right next to the truck we were driving, and it just sat there and looked at us, and
yeah,
they're not very Well,
this one did the same thing. We got to camp, it was in the road, and it jumped on the side, and we drove up, and it just sat there and looked at us for the longest time.
Yeah. Did he have any partridge feathers sticking out of his mouth?
I don't know, but he should have.
Well, I'm getting mixed reviews from people that we talked to. I was up in the Allegash this week, Fort Kent, Allegash, and Portage, and so forth. And, some of the guys that I talked to have been out in the woods hunting and said, boy, we were out, there were, nine guys in the hunting party.
Yeah.
Out for 4 days, and they shot six birds.
Yeah. Oh. We saw them every day and numerous birds. Just nobody really was, we weren't big hunters. We just wanted to be up there, and we'd watch them a while. And sometimes they'd get out and get the gun and get it loaded and then stand there and watch it. So.
Yeah, and then I talked to other guys out Chamberlain way, and we limited out 2 days in a row, and so.
Yeah, well, in the camp, there's a lot of birds in where I go. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there, that's good to hear. Also back with you.
Yes.
We have Mr. Norm Plord. Hello, Norm.
Good evening, Jim. Glad to have you back.
Well, glad to be back. That took Paul going out to Colorado for a month, getting back on the show, but I'm glad to be back. So how about you, Norm? You been out at all?
Oh, no. I've been busy around the house. I've got to get some stuff done before things turn white.
Yeah, and I'm heading up north tomorrow to work on the front of the camp. I just shingled the bunkhouse and have to poly that before winter flies. So, well, good. Well, welcome to the Maine Outdoors, if you're listening to us.
We're missing somebody here tonight.
Oh,
he's hiding in the corner.
He's hiding in the corner. I thought he turned and burned.
No, he snuck back in.
Mr. Jim Layton, take a bow, Jim.
I am here.
Well, you were so quiet back there, I didn't know.
Snuck back in the corner.
I'm glad that you came in.
Hey, I was talking to a fellow that had been up in the Allegash, way up in the Allegash near Dequam. There's quite a crew of them, and they all limited out 4 days in a row.
Well, there.
Yeah, and I know
sure
it's not the same party.
Yeah. I'm getting the feeling that there's pockets where birds did better than others. It's always the same. You're always going to find somebody that said, we had a wet, cold May, and that that hurt the clutches. And
You know, Clayton Lake was up in that area. It was always, always good. And along Chemptibemtcook Stream,
yeah,
up near Ross Lake,
mm-hmm,
that's always good, and it's still good this year.
Yeah. Well, I've always been the one that says, you know, I think birds are smarter than we give them credit for. You watch those eagles on the eagle cam when they're, I think it's in late February, early March, and there's an eagle sitting on a clutch of eggs with snow all over. And you say to yourself, my goodness, it's like 10 degrees out and they have an egg under there. How can that possibly survive? So I think if an eagle can sit on an egg in the snow, that a partridge can sit on it in the wet and be okay for the most part, as long as it doesn't flood. So
that's right, as long as it doesn't get wet.
Yes, and you took the long way home today, I understand.
I did.
You were up in Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
And had to stop by Grammy's for a bite.
Yes, we did, and what a bite that was.
And then you went through the woods.
I did.
Jeez.
I did. I took what used to be a snowmobile trail.
Yeah.
And come out at what you guys call Red Bridge there. And,
right.
And over in Oakfield.
Oakfield, yeah. That's...
And hit the interstate and came back that way. But that was quite a ride, and we went right up through and underneath the windmills.
Oh, yeah.
What a sight.
Those are beasts.
Yep.
Well, let's get into the Outdoor Digest. Tonight's Outdoor Digest is brought to you this week and every week by my favorite publication, the Northwoods Sporting Journal and Northwoods Publications.
There, and mine too.
It's the one that we like to play. When we go into the woods, I always pack a bunch of them.
Hunting, fishing, loving every day. That's the prayer that a country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting, fishing, loving every day.
That's it. Hunting, fishing, loving every day. And, of course, the legislature this year did the early grouse season, partridge, which opened up on September 28th to accommodate casting and blasting on the same day. It used to be that folks go into camp and they'd fish on one day, the end of the fishing season, and then the next day was always opening day of bird season, and they'd do a little bit of that. But now, thanks to our legislature, we can do them all one fell day, and today was this year was September 28th. We were able to do that. Let's see. Sunrise today was 6:55 a.m. Sunset at 5:44. That gives us a length of day of 10 hours and 45 minutes, which is 2 hours and 48 minutes less than June 21st, which was the longest day of the year. Our last full moon was on October 13th. That was the Hunter's Moon. And our next full moon is the Beaver Moon, and that will occur on Tuesday, November 12th. Which is the day after Veterans Day. So keep that in mind as you go about and look up to the sky for the moon. Let's see. Just closed was the second week of moose hunting. And like I said, I was up in the Fort Kent Allegash area. And, boy, we were up there on Wednesday morning, and it was a cold morning. And, boy, the moose that came out from the gates heading back to Fort Kent to get them tagged was quite impressive line of them that we saw coming out one right after the other that Wednesday morning when we were up that way. And they did pretty good. And this year you can go on maine.gov, and they have harvest information by species and by year. You can go back years and bear, moose, deer, turkey, how many were tagged and so forth. And they also do current year, what they call dashboard. In other words, how many moose have been shot so far, how many deer have been tagged so far this year, how many bear have been tagged so far this year. And I'm sure it's not 100% accurate, but most stations do report real time on the computer, and they track that. So
yeah, and it's done by districts.
Yes. Yeah, you can tap on the district. And
yeah, the WNDs.
Yeah. And I think for the most part, you know, the moose and the deer and the bear are doing pretty good right now. So
yeah,
let's see. This coming Saturday, October 26th, is the Youth Deer Day. That applies to all youth. I believe it's 16 and under. and must be accompanied by the adult, and the adult can't carry a rifle and so forth. Check your law books for specifics. And then November 2nd, Saturday, is Maine residents only. I'll be up at the Presque Isle Fish and Game Club for their Hunter's Breakfast there, taking my grandkids up there for breakfast. And November 4th, Monday, is a regular firearm season on deer. And, of course, grouse, pheasant, currently in full swing right now, runs up through December 31st. So, well, let's get into our trivia question. And our guest this evening that I won't introduce now, I'll introduce him after the commercial break, will read the question, and it's a hint about what we're going to cover tonight. Go ahead.
How many tick species have been found in Maine?
How many tick species have been found in Maine? If you think you know the answer to that, 1-800-966-1039. 1-800-966-1039. How many tick species have been found in Maine? We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host for the evening, Jim Thorne. You're listening to us tonight on WVOM 103.9 FM Bangor, 101.3 FM out of Augusta, and 95.1 FM in Rockland. Our number here, if you have any questions for us, 1-800-966-1039. And I also want to remind everybody that you can listen to us on our podcast on WVOMFM.com, and just click on Maine Outdoors, and you can go back and listen to our shows that have run in the past. And before we get to our trivia question, I do want to do a shout-out to anyone out there that is interested in selling advertising for the Northwoods Sporting Journal. Basically, Vic Morin and myself do all we can to cover the state, but it's just too big a state for both of us to cover. So therefore, if you live in coastal Maine, if you live in Augusta, Fairfield, Skowhegan, Farmington, any of those outlying areas, we would love to talk to you about a very generous opportunity, 25% commission, to help businesses advertise in the Northwoods Sporting Journal. So if you're interested in that, or you know of somebody that may be interested in that, call Vic Morin at area code 207-735-8741, 735-8741, and he would love to talk to you about selling some advertising for the Northwoods Sporting Journal. Well, before we went on break, we had a trivia question. And what was our trivia question again?
How many tick species have been found in Maine?
All right. We got a caller on the line. Caller, are you there? Try that again. Are you there? You sound like you're in the back corner of the room.
Pull up the next one, Scott.
Something about the phone.
Okay, we got you now. So you think you know the answer?
Well, I'm going to try.
All right, how many?
15.
What do you think?
Sounds right to me.
That's right on the nose from all the information that we've got as far as how many tick species have been identified in Maine. Congratulations. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Phil, calling from Old Town.
All right, Phil. Well, tonight we are going to give out a one-year subscription to the Northwoods Sporting Journal.
Oh, good.
Do you read the Northwoods Sporting Journal currently?
I sure do.
Okay. Well, if you already have a subscription, you can gift this to somebody, Christmas coming right up, or you could add it on to your current one. So.
Okay.
Do you get out at all into the woods, Phil?
Oh, not as much as I used to. I messed my knee up a couple of years ago, and I have to be careful now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that does make it tough to get around, but anything else going on in the outdoor world with you?
I'm just waiting for the mosquitoes to leave.
Aren't we all?
Hey, I never see anything like it.
Yeah, dear diary, 2019 was the year of the mosquito in Maine.
Yeah,
yeah. Boy, it was. I agree with you there.
Yeah, I come back from up north today, and my windshield was just covered.
Yeah.
Just covered.
Boy. Yeah. Well, that's good.
I never see them stay this late.
No. We've already had a frost, too, so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe.
They're going to frost, I guess.
Maybe the snow will deter them.
I hope so. Maybe they'll come back with snowshoes.
Well, all right. Thanks for calling in, Phil. You were right, and you stay on the line, and we'll get the information from you, and we'll get the Northwoods Sporting Journal to you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Well, before I introduce my guest this evening, and that was just kind of a little bit of a tease there, I have my own story. This summer, I came down with a bad headache that I could not shake. I had it essentially for 5 days. I was taking Tylenol, I was taking everything. I had a stiff neck, I had a fever. And my beautiful wife convinced me to go to the emergency room to see what was going on. And long story short, it was very confusing there. They didn't know what I had. I was in the hospital for 4 days. They did every sort of testing that you can imagine on me. They did MRI, they did CAT scan, they did spinal taps, they drew blood samples endlessly. And after I was out of the hospital a week, I got a letter that I couldn't interpret, and I had to take it to my doctor, and I said, did they ever discover what I had? And they said, yes, you had babesiosis, which is a form tick-borne virus. So I've learned a lot about ticks since then, and this year, I believe, Maine CDC wants to make it, declare Lyme disease and ticks an epidemic, and I know Susan Collins has introduced some legislation along the same lines. So, without further ado, my guest for this evening is Griffin Dill, and he is the tick lab coordinator at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, the Diagnostic and Research Laboratory, and he directs the Tick Identification and Disease Screening Program and is currently working on a PhD in tick ecology. Griffin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's my pleasure to be here.
I think anybody that hunts in the Maine outdoors, fishes in the Maine outdoors, spends any time in the Maine outdoors. In fact, you don't even have to spend time in the outdoors because somebody coming into your house or a pet that was outdoors coming in can pose a threat to a tick-borne illness and disease.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just that quick trip out to the compost pile, you know, walking from the car up to the front steps, or like you said, you know, the pets coming and going in and out is enough to potentially put you in contact with a tick and thus a tick-borne illness.
And there are a lot of misconceptions, I call it, about ticks and Lyme disease that a lot of folks have. And I do want to throw this out there. If you have any questions, give us a call, 1-800-966-1039, because this year I believe there were, and I want to say, close to 500 cases of babesiosis or anaplasmosis from tick-borne diseases. So I think it was like 150 babesiosis cases and, you know, 400 cases of, or give or take, of the anaplasmosis. So it's real. It's here. And I talk to everybody. I talk to people up north, and they say, you know, how far north is it? How far north are the ticks? Well, the 15 deer ticks in our trivia question is kind of an indication. I mean, there's ones that are specific. There's a deer tick. There's a dog tick. There's a woodchuck tick, there's a squirrel tick, a mouse tick, a seabird tick, a weasel and beaver tick. It goes on and on. Rabbit ticks, moose ticks. And each one has different characteristics of what they seek out and what they carry for disease.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, a lot of the ticks that we do have here are very host specific. They're interested in feeding on a specific type of animal and really nothing else. The one that we're really most concerned with is the deer tick. It's the one that's most likely to be transmitting Lyme and the other pathogens that you mentioned. So it's really the one that we're most focused on here. And in terms of geographic distribution of that tick, you know, whether it's in northern Maine, southern Maine, coastal Maine is a question that we're really trying to tease out at the University of Maine.
And they don't differentiate. In other words, when I was moose hunting and I was tagging our moose, and there was a biologist there that was checking, you know, for ticks. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, geez, well, you know, we didn't see any ticks, and we checked our body and our clothes, and we didn't have any ticks on us. And she said, well, they don't want to be on you.
Yeah, so the winter tick or the moose tick is really specific to moose. We do occasionally come across hunters that encounter this type of tick, and it's a little bit different the way it acts out in the environment. Most ticks, you know, they're kind of on their own. You pick up one or two as you're walking through the woods. Mm-hmm. The winter tick larvae will actually cluster together in these groups of, you know, a few hundred up to a couple thousand potentially. Yeah. So, you know, as you're walking through the brush, you look down and you've got, you know, 500 of these tiny little ticks crawling on you. It can be pretty unnerving. You know, fortunately, that species.
That was a nervous laughter.
Yeah, yeah. That species, you know, like you said, it doesn't really prefer to feed on people, and it's not a real concern as far as diseases go, but still not something you really want to see crawling all over your hunting gear is 500, 600 ticks.
And a dog tick, you know, can embed in you,
yeah,
can bite you, but typically don't carry the disease that the deer tick carries?
Yeah, so the dog tick, we're fortunate so far in Maine in that they are not known to transmit disease. In other parts of the country, they carry something called Rocky Mountain spotted fever, not something we've found here yet, but something we are looking to kind of survey.
All right, we're going to go on break, come back, talk some more about it right here on Maine Outdoors. Back to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host for the evening, Jim Thorne. You're listening to us on WVOM-FM 103.9 Bangor, 101.3 in Augusta, and 95.1 out of Rockland. And our number here, if you have any questions tonight, 1-800-966-1039. And my guest this evening is Griffin Dill. And Griffin is the tick lab coordinator up at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. And before I get too much into discussion about ticks and as it applies to hunters and things we can do to prevent it and having to endure what I endured this year. Now, and this is just from a tick bite that I didn't know that I had. I didn't feel it. I didn't find it. There was no bullseye rash. There was none of that. I just got sick. I got sick, bad sick. And it took 4 days in the hospital, 2 weeks out of my summer, and about almost $30,000 in medical bills. And I asked the doctor, I said, so does this make me immune from another case of Lyme disease or babesiosis or anaplasmosis? And he says, no, doesn't work that way.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's one of those things that, you know, basically immediately after recovering, you can be bit again and become ill again. So it's something to take serious.
So I'm quite literally once bitten, twice shy when it comes to ticks because, you know, I always thought, like most people, it always happens to somebody else, you know, but I spend my life, a lot of it in the outdoors. I hike, I fish, I hunt, I spend a lot of time outdoors. And one of the areas that you get into is the prevention, correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
And briefly, what are we talking when we talk prevention?
Yeah, I mean, managing ticks is really such a difficult thing to do that, you know, the first and most important step is personal protection. So it's doing things like, you know, wearing the proper clothing and gear when you are outside, using repellents, And when you return from the outdoors, conducting tick checks, and that includes, you know, basically stripping off your clothes. One thing you can do with your clothing is toss them in the hot dryer for 15, 20 minutes, tumble them on high heat. That will kill any of the ticks that are on the clothing.
Good to know.
And that gives you the opportunity now to really thoroughly check yourself over for, you know, any ticks that may have made their way onto to your skin.
Yeah, and that's an important point. We talk, you know, hunting. There's a lot of guys that I talk to that say, well, geez, you know, I'm out in the woods and deer got a big, you know, nose that is really, really sensitive and I don't want to wear off. And there's other ways to protect your clothing, right?
There is, yeah. Something called permethrin is probably the most effective repellent that's currently available. And it's something that, you know, unlike the other repellents, it's not for use on our skin. It's for use directly on clothing and gear. You spray your clothing, let it dry, and then it's good for as much as, you know, 7 to 10 washes. There's also clothing and gear that's pre-treated by the company that's generally good for, you know, anywhere from 60 to 80 washes. And in addition to actually repelling ticks, permethrin will actually kill ticks that stay on that clothing for too long. So yeah. Certainly something that's effective.
And I've talked to a lot of folks that have been bitten by ticks and they do discover them, and it seems like, you know, there's the usual suspect spots that are armpit, in the back.
Yeah, absolutely. There, you know,
the belt line.
Oh yeah, the ticks can and will attach just about anywhere, but there are some of those spots, you know, kind of along the hairline in the scalp, you know, armpits, groin, kind of even behind the knees, just some of those areas where they're likely to go unnoticed. And they're a little bit kind of tucked away and safe from our eyes. And so it's important, as I said, to check your body thoroughly using both your eyes and your hands to find them, unfortunately.
Yeah. And it's the deer ticks, and I've become more familiar with the cycle of ticks. And you could probably explain the cycle from winter, fall, winter, through the spring and the summer, and the different stages of the ticks and what they do and go through.
Yeah, so the deer tick itself actually, you know, it's relatively long lived. It will live for 2 years. You know, because of that 2 year cycle, there are times of the year when we see the different stages of the life cycle. So the immature stage, the larval ticks that have just emerged from the egg, we tend to see those towards the end of summer. And with that stage, they generally aren't getting on people. They seem to prefer kind of small animals. They stay very low in the vegetation. The kind of intermediate second stage, the nymph, we tend to see that June to mid-July. And at that stage, they can now potentially transmit Lyme disease and some of these other pathogens. So those larval ticks that have emerged are generally uninfected. They have to actually feed on an infected animal to pick up the pathogens that they transmit. Now, when it comes to the adults, they actually have two peaks of activity. There's a big spike in their activity in the spring as they're looking for their third and final meal, and then again in the fall. So, you know, in most years, we've kind of put away the bug spray. The bugs are gone October, November.
Right.
But that's when deer tick adults are particularly active.
And I hunt. My hunting method is such that I'm perfect tick fodder, and that is I like to wear the fleece and the wool pants.
Yeah.
Those are and I watched a show about how ticks get on, and they crawl up on a piece of grass out on the end of it, and they hold on with one side of their legs, and then the other ones are right out into the open just waiting for something to brush up against that piece of grass, and they just like little fish hooks. They grab that clothing or fur, as the case may be, with an animal, and they're on, and they're golden. They're good to go.
Absolutely, yeah. It's something called questing. It's really very simple. Like you described, they're just kind of hanging out passively in the vegetation, hoping that a person or an animal is going to walk by, and they're going to have a nice, quick, easy blood meal.
And they're mostly, the deer ticks are now adults, right? In the late fall, like
yep.
this. Yep. And they'll be there through
basically once until, you know, we're getting extended frost, there's snow on the ground. So, I mean, right through November, potentially.
Yeah.
In years past, we've had ticks sent into the lab all the way up until Christmas Eve if it's warm enough. So.
Yeah. And I don't want to lose this because you have a website.
Yeah.
That people can go to.
Absolutely.
And that helps with tick identification, a little bit of information. You also have a service where folks can send in ticks?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, anyone can send in a tick for species identification, and that's free of charge. And then for $15, they can actually have deer ticks tested for the pathogens that cause Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and babesiosis, which are the three most common tick-borne illnesses here in Maine.
So you only test the deer ticks at this point?
We're currently only testing the deer ticks. Next year, we're actually starting a panel to test dog ticks and other tick species as well for some of those pathogens that we mentioned earlier, Rocky Mountain spotted fever being one.
So if I send in a tick, I'm not sure, I haven't identified it, what it is, I send it to you and it's a wood tick. You send me back and say, you know, this was a wood tick, it wasn't a deer tick. Currently, we're not as concerned as...
Right. So, if you know, this year, we were, if you were to send in a dog tick, we would just let you know that it was a dog tick. There's really not a big concern in regards to disease transmission. We'd refund your $15 and go from there.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Your website... I got it abbreviated as ticks.umaine.edu.
That's correct.
ticks.umaine.edu. And in there is a whole plethora of information. And there's a menu that talks about wearing appropriate clothing, about treating your clothing, about what to do if you have a tick. Submitting a tick. It also goes through with a little bit of ticks of Maine, and you can actually click right on the deer tick or what they call the black leg tick, and it gives you a description, and there's a picture, there's an image there. The adult female engorged. Now, is it the female the only one that draws the bites that draws the blood, or
So for the most part, it
like
is the
mosquito.
It is the females that we're concerned with. The females are the ones that will actually stay attached for long periods of times and become swollen and engorged. The males, they'll occasionally bite, but just the way their body is set up, they can't swell and engorge like the females can. So they'll be attached for maybe a couple hours at most, and then drop off. Whereas the females can be attached for several days.
Well. It is that time in our show when we thank our sponsor, one of our longest-running sponsors. How appropriate that one of the longest or the longest-running Maine Outdoors show, the Maine Outdoors Hunting and Fishing, would have one of the longest-running sponsors, General Appliance Services, and Al Elkin down on 91 Center Street in Brewer. If you haven't heard about Al Elkin, he is one of the finest men that has probably the most knowledge of anyone that I've ever seen when it comes to gas appliances and gas operating and gas repair. And they do have the unique line of off-grid appliances, and they service most everything else, including composting toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
Jim never misses. I had a composting toilet. Did I tell you that?
No.
I had a composting toilet at one point before we actually did the septic line to our septic system at camp, and that worked very good.
It's pretty neat.
Beat going to the outhouse, that's for sure.
Yes, sir.
And Al Elkin down at General Appliance will advise you and such. I've referred many people his way that have had lighting issues or stove issues or gas refrigerator things. And he'll either talk you through it or he'll, if you're a long ways away and not his service area, he'll tell you who to call to get it fixed. So he's not a man that will steer you wrong. So If you have anything that you're looking for, new rebuild appliances, servicing, give Al Elkin a call down at General Appliance Services, 91 Center Street in Brewer, Maine, and tell him the Maine Outdoors sent you. So there we go.
Yes, sir.
Well, we are back with our guest this evening, Griffin Dill. And Griffin Dill is the Tick Lab Coordinator at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. And he works in the Diagnostic and Research Laboratory. Soon, maybe hopefully, to be Dr. Dill and working on his PhD in tick ecology, which, you know, ticks aren't going away. I mean, for whatever it's worth, there's a warming climate. We never had to worry about ticks like we do now. I'm not sure what the history of babesiosis and anaplasmosis and Lyme disease is when it refers to Maine, but it's here, it's real, and we have to be vigilant about it. Those of us that spend time in the Maine outdoors, hunting and fishing, you can continue to do those things, just you need to have a new awareness that maybe we didn't in years past. Okay. Well, we have a caller right now. I'd like to go there. Hello, caller. Are you on the line?
Hello. My name is JJ. I'm from Midcoast, Maine.
All right, JJ. How are things down Midcoast, Maine?
Oh, doing well. You know, cold, getting cold this time of year. Sun's going down earlier, like everywhere. And your comment about being aware of ticks this late in the season is very sobering.
Mm.
We need to be aware of that. And Jim, I'm so glad you're still here after that terrible disease.
Well, and you know,
how are you doing now?
I am one of the lucky ones. I made 100% recovery, full recovery.
Wow.
They caught it early enough. Luckily, I had what they called the neurological version of it. You talk to people, and as I talk to people, JJ, there's different symptoms when you get bit with a tick that has a virus. Some are more subtle than others. There's some that affect your joints. Some people say, oh, just I feel tired, you know, but I don't feel like I need to go to the emergency room. Or they, like myself, they didn't discover a bullseye. Or they didn't, you know, I always thought, you know, I'll find an embedded tick in me. I never found an embedded tick in me. I don't know how that happened or what happened along that line. But, yeah, I mean, I've gone out hunting in years past, and what I do is I strip down all my outer clothing in the garage, and I hang up my woolens and my fluorescent orange and my hunting pants and my boots, and then I come in the house, and I've done that a couple times in years past, and only to discover a tick crawling on my hand, you know, and that time you pick it off, you put it in a bag and say, geez, that's... That was, you know, but when you get hit like that,
as well.
Yeah, but those that I have talked to, and of course, as I go around the state and I talk about it, I hear the stories of those that have had it and had different symptoms and different stages of it and that didn't get treated, and that's the difference. They put the IV steroids to me, the IV antibiotics, and then I did oral steroids and oral antibiotics, the doxycycline and the prednisone when I left the hospital, and luckily that really knocked it. So there are those that walk around that don't get it treated, and it's still there, and it is troublesome and sore joints and all kinds of things. So, yeah.
And this question is for Griffin. Are you related to Jim Dill?
I am related.
At the beginning of the show, so I might have missed it.
Yeah, I am related to Jim Dill. He's actually my father. And
I thought he might be.
Yes, he is.
Well, I'm glad to see you coming on as well. I love when he comes on Hot and Cold and Maine Outdoors.
Yeah, we've made ticks and bugs the family business, I guess.
I guess it is, yeah. It runs in the family.
Yeah.
And can you say that website one more time?
It is. It's ticks.umaine.edu. Ticks.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, JJ. Thank you for calling. For those that don't know, Griffin's dad is Senator Jim Dill, District 5 Senator. And I knew that before, but I am only aware of it because next year in 2020. I hope to be the candidate in District 103 for the State House of Representatives in Carmel, Herman, and Etna. So hopefully be able to see your dad and work with him more closely down there. And I know that there's even legislation they're working on that concerns ticks. So we have another caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
All right. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Madam Mascona's name. My name is Rock. I work in a critical coronary care unit, probably the largest hospital in the area. And we're seeing a lot of tick-borne disease, which affects the heart rate. Going to the 30s, the first thing the doctors want to do is put a pacemaker in. Now they're getting more used to testing for Lyme's disease. Comes back positive. In the past, they would put a pacemaker in anybody with a low heart rate, saying, well, you're old, something wrong with your heart. They're not testing them. There's quite a disconnect from what the Lyme disease is and what we're doing for treatments.
Right.
I had one patient that was from the coastal Maine, southern Maine. I said, don't let them do it until you test them back.
Mm-hmm.
It was Lyme disease, some antibiotics. She was fine. Out the door she went.
Yeah. And ironically, this was one of the tough parts in my case is nothing came back positive. And they had to send a sample out to the Mayo Clinic out in Rochester, Minnesota, for whatever reason, to come back finally as a positive hit.
I think the original Lyme disease, I'm not sure which one it is, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
It can affect a myriad of different symptoms.
Sure.
Aches, pains, knee joint swelling.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to diagnose because everything's so different.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of them, people let it go, is they just think, oh, geez, I'm getting old. I'm getting stiff. I'm getting out of shape.
And one of the real common line of symptoms with all of these tick-borne illnesses is kind of those vague flu-like symptoms. And one of the things we call a red flag for tick-borne illness is you're having those flu-like symptoms outside of flu season. So, you know, it's middle of July and suddenly you feel like you're coming down with the flu.
Yeah.
That's a good red flag to consider tick-borne illness or in some cases mosquito-borne illnesses as well.
Right. But with the flu season being almost year-round now, it's very
That's what I thought I had. I was going to ride it out. But again, those symptoms.
I had 30 years ago an infectious disease doctor. I said, well, "What do you think about this Lyme disease?" Oh, it's a bunch of hype. There's nothing to it.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're seeing the results of this.
Yeah.
But what's happened in the 30 years that nobody was diagnosed, mistreated? It almost should be a test that is a first measure for everybody that comes in with maybe not first, but flu-like symptoms that's lasting more than a while that have had the flu shot.
Yeah.
It really is an epidemic. We're seeing 15, 20 cases where they want to put pacemakers in 20-year-olds that it's Lyme disease, but it takes 4 days to get the results back, and they want to put them through and get it done.
Yeah.
It really is an epidemic.
And they're getting better at it right now, I can tell you that. So, well, Ross, thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your input.
Have a good evening.
All right, you too. Well, if you've been with us tonight, we've been talking with Griffin Dill. He's the Tick Lab Coordinator at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and they have a website that you can go to, ticks.umaine.edu. They also have testing where you can send in your tick. It's only $15 if it's embedded or something. It's bitten you or bitten an animal, and it's a deer tick. You can send it in. If it's not a deer tick, send it in, and they'll let you know it's not a deer tick. So $15 is good for a peace of mind. Well, before we leave tonight, I watched a television special recently on the late Bud Levitt. And it was a tribute to him. And, of course, a lot of others have gone before us in the Maine outdoors world, the hunting and fishing world that do writing or radio shows or TV shows, and he used to close out, Bud Levitt used to close out every broadcast with a certain amount of words of wisdom that he shared with all his listeners. And I wanted to share those with you tonight as a tribute to Bud Levitt.
And until next week at this time, remember, a good family plays together, prays together, and stays together. Good night, everyone.
And with that, I think that that is words of wisdom. And he used to close out with a familiar song that I'll play tonight.
That should make everybody out there smile. Sure does me.
I remember listening to Bud Levitt and watching him on TV, and he was part of my growing up.
Mine
and,
too.
And part of my love of the Maine outdoors. And I can remember writing a letter. I was in the Air Force up in Alaska, and I wrote to the late Tom Hennessy, and I asked him what I needed to do to be an outdoor writer. And I still have the letter and Furs and Fins, the book that he gave me. Well, folks, we've enjoyed being with you tonight. Thanks for joining us. And we invite you to tune in here next Sunday night at 7 p.m. for another edition of Maine Outdoors.